Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. We've got a great episode lined up for you today as we're discussing a topic that I know will be high on the list of priorities for HR teams and leaders who are planning for 2022, the topic of workplace well-being. So joining us today to talk about this topic, we have our very own Mary Cullen, as always, Founder and Managing Director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary, how are you?
Hello, Owen, and welcome, Brian.
Brilliant, and as Mary says, we're also delighted to be joined by the brilliant Brian Crook, a well-being educator, speaker, and advisor empowering Irish organisations to promote and sustain well-being within their workplaces. He's the founder of Workplace Wellbeing Ireland Community and is the course director of the Postgraduate Certificate in Workplace Wellness at Tangent Trinity College Dublin. How are you, Brian? Thanks for joining us.
I'm great, Owen. Thanks very much. And thanks for the invitation. Thanks to you and Mary for it. Really looking forward to our chat today.
Brilliant stuff. So we'll kick off with you, Brian, if I may. So I suppose Workplace well-being is nothing new. Some HR teams and organizations, though, still kind of struggle to get an effective well-being strategy off the ground or simply just don't know where to start. So can you share with us some of the tips you'd give, Brian, to companies and teams that want to kind of get a workplace well-being strategy going and getting it off the ground?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I guess the first thing I try and kind of empower organizations with is just get away from the random acts of wellness. Anyway, just get away from that kind of endless cycle of, I don't know, a yoga class, a bowl of fruit, you know, all good stuff, but there's no kind of measurement. There's no real meaning behind it. There's no kind of learnings behind it. So I have an 8-step framework, and all the courses that I deliver, my own courses through the Workwell Institute and then the core, the postgrad at Tangent as well, is based on this this 8-step framework. So that there's really no better place to start from that. And step 5 on that is to choose the interventions, if you like. So I think the best place to start is just with steps 1, 2, and 3 on that, kind of the foundational steps. So before you even consider an initiative or an intervention, it would be something like step 1, which is growing your committed and aligned leadership. And the word grow is in there intentionally. It's a process. It takes time. Step 2 would be to create a shared ownership for well-being across the organization. So it's not, we want to kind of get away from the idea that what we're doing here from a well-being perspective is it's just another HR initiative. We want to kind of get away from that. We want this to people within the organization to buy into it, to input into it, to feedback all the way through that. So that's an important step as well, to ensure everyone has a say. And then step 3 is to gather meaningful data. That might be external, and might be looking at the competition, but certainly it's also gathering your own internal data. What are your colleagues? What are your people? What are their needs and their wants? What are they looking for in terms of well-being? And, you know, once you've done a little bit of work in those 3 areas, you know, you're kind of setting yourself up for success. It's a nice foundation anyway to build upon and then to make progress from there.
Brilliant. And I think Brian kind of touched on it there, Mary. I suppose a key thing I think with implementing, I suppose, any new initiative, not just well-being, is kind of getting that buy-in from senior leadership. And as Brian kind of mentioned it there, that's obviously a key process. I suppose, can you share some guidance or some tips on what people should, I suppose, consider when they're trying to get that buy-in from senior leadership, when they're trying to pitch, I suppose, a well-being strategy to senior leaders?
Sure. I couldn't agree with you more, Brian, around getting away from the random acts of wellness, because, you know, so many of my colleagues talk about things like, you know, we had a great speaker come in and they talked to us about mental health. But that in isolation, great. But in isolation, it doesn't do a whole heap. So I'm very much about, you know, getting your champions throughout an organization, but starting with your senior leadership team. You've got to find sponsors at board at C-suite level who believe in wellness and who are going to support whatever initiatives that you do ultimately put in place. But they have to understand what's in it for the organization at that level. So you've got to tailor your arguments in language that the senior team actually understand. And I think we touched on this. We did a webinar last week on mental health, focusing in on suicide as part of a sponsorship of Pieta House. And, you know, we talked about the importance of talking the language that the leadership team understands. They're motivated differently, whether that's moral, ethical, legal, financial, whether it's about absence rates within the organization. They're going to be motivated by different arguments, and you've got to understand what those arguments are and use those levers to influence your senior team to buy into the whole concept of organizational well-being. And some HR practitioners are better at that than others, and have more influence within an organization than others, but it really starts there to get that sponsorship.
Yeah, and I think if I can come in there, it's, we're kind of singing off the same hymn sheet there. I have, if you like, for the first step, for the growing committed and aligned leadership, there's almost a number of steps within that. And you've kind of touched on most of them already, Mary. It's kind of know your audience, get to know your audience. What do they care about? As you said, what are they motivated by? What are their own values? And then if you can tie that in as well, what are the business goals, the business objectives, the organizational values? And can you then almost tie in, if you're building a well-being, start with your well-being vision statement. Can you derive a well-being vision statement from what you understand of the leadership team's values and from the organization's values and objectives as well? And so once if you can do that, then by working towards your well-being vision, you're actually working towards the organization's vision and you're working towards the leadership team's vision as well. So that's a brilliant way to try and get leadership on board.
I suppose the kind of natural next step then is, I suppose, obviously mobilizing the wider population. I think we've all seen from most effective well-being programs out there, the ones that we see have the most success and the most engagement have really engaged the kind of wider population. So I suppose for yourself, Brian, building off what we are, I suppose how we get leaders involved, but how do we get the wider population really engaged in a well-being strategy to really make it kind of take off?
Yeah, I think that would go back then to step two then, to create that, trying to create that shared ownership for well-being. So rather than kind of, you know, pushing it out and mandating, and this is what we're doing, you're trying to get people involved from the beginning. And if it is, maybe the very beginning is deriving that well-being vision statement. You're understanding what the leadership team's kind of vision and values are, but you're also, maybe you're trying to, the early stages of gathering a well-being champion team, like a rep from each area in the business, each location, each department, a kind of a mix of different voices. You're getting their input into what well-being means to them and what their well-being vision is as well. So they're helping to shape and kind of craft this well-being vision statement then as well. They're involved, if you can as well, get them involved in defining the role of the well-being champion within your organization as well. So again, you're not mandating, here's what a well-being champion does at our organization. You're welcoming their input into it. They're defining the role themselves, if you like. It's all of that involvement in the process all the way through. That's how you create that shared ownership. That's over time, that's going to lead to more and more engagement. You're going to be understanding much better the needs and wants of your teams, because you have people on the ground are feeding back consistently and, well, look, that didn't work, we need to do something else, or look, that initiative we had was really successful, let's do a little bit more of that.
Do most programs tend to concentrate on the physical side of things, most initiatives that you see out there, because I still see a huge area around mental health that's just not really talked about, other than the odd speaker coming into an organization and maybe a bit of mental first aid training, but not really with all the supports and things in place that you would need to make that effective.
Well, they certainly used to be. They certainly used, that was the case. It still is to a large extent, mostly physical. And in fact, when I started Workplace Wellbeing Ireland, this must be 5 years ago now, when I was reaching out to them, when I was chatting to people, there were the default reaction was, oh, no, we've already got some HIIT classes or, you know, yoga classes here. Whereas it wasn't even close to what kind of I was offering, but there was almost this default understanding that I was talking about just some physical activity classes. But I think thankfully in the last couple of years, certainly the last 18 months, there has been much more of a focus on the mental well-being side of things, which is really positive. Now, we're not nearly there yet. A lot of the attention is still on kind of the pushing the interventions down to the individual, like the EAP programs, which are excellent, but they're for individuals that maybe are already facing a challenging situation. Mental health first aid is only a step up from that. Again, an excellent program again, but you're looking for volunteers that will do maybe a 2-day training program. And there's a lot of pressure on them to try and kind of fulfill this role within an organization, which maybe they're not 100% clear of. And they're maybe talking to people who have some serious challenges. So what I'd love to see is the focus move back on to the organizational level. So we're talking about what are the job demands that are causing this in the first place? You know, is it workload, lack of autonomy, relationships with supervisors? What is it? And is there something we can do about those psychosocial hazards even before we get to the mental health first aid can be a fantastic addition then, as well as an EAP program, but can we do something? Can we focus on the organizational level and do something there instead?
Yeah, and so many of the EAP programs report that low uptake, don't they? You know, and that fundamentally comes back, I think, to trust. And trust about, if I access an EAP program through my workplace, you know, is that going to somehow damage me in my career? Are HR maintaining data on me around my health, my well-being, or my marital problems, or whatever it might be, that makes me wary about accessing those programs through work? And I think it fundamentally centers on trust, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
If I don't trust my leadership, if I don't trust the organization, why would I use programs that may reveal deeply sensitive information about me?
Well, especially when you're told that the EAP program is completely 100% confidential, which they are. But then if it hasn't been communicated properly, or the people in your organization aren't talking about it properly, you're going to call up and the first thing you're going to be asked for is your full name, your date of birth, what company you work for, and maybe your address, I'm not sure. But, you know, so all of a sudden it's not feeling very anonymous anymore. Now, these are just standard questions, and I see organizations communicating, look, you're going to be asked these questions because just so it's put back to our cost center or whatever it may be. But yeah, there is this real, there's a stigma around mental health, but there's also a stigma around using EAP programs.
Which is such a pity, because they're so valuable.
Yeah.
Particularly, you know, when people are struggling, and that we see it regularly when people raise grievances or, you know, raise issues around bullying in the workplace or sexual harassment or something like that. And we're trying to direct people towards an EAP program and being told, no, I've arranged my own support system outside of the organization.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real pity that people aren't accessing it in that way. And EAP is such an important part of organizational well-being. I'd love to see greater take-up, but that, I think, comes back to communication, as you say, trust within the organization, and tackling some of those broader organizational issues. It doesn't start with initiatives. It starts with, as you say, looking at our working hours, our culture, our management style, our approach, And that's why getting the senior sponsorship is just so important, so that you're really tackling organizational issues as much as anything else.
Yeah.
But realistically, sometimes problems that people experience have nothing to do with work, mm-hmm. but they affect people's work. You know, and how do you think wellbeing programs can help there?
As in bringing your whole self to work?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it goes back to the trust thing. If the organization is open, is honest, is providing supports for colleagues, then I think that's, and it's a type of place where you can bring your whole self to work. You're open. You can talk about kind of the issues you're facing, the challenges you're facing. That's kind of what it boils down to. And just on the EAP program or programs, what I have seen, I've seen a couple of organizations doing interesting work in this area, promoting them, talking about them, senior leadership teams kind of talking about, let's say that they've used them or whatever, but just putting a lot of effort into them and talking about kind of the benefits as opposed to just the kind of the blanket one or two liners here and there. And the objective of these organizations has been to create kind of safer work environments where it's okay to say that you're not okay. And it's taken time, of course. It doesn't happen overnight. But one of the interesting metrics that they've seen is, now, I don't know if you'd want to be gauging this or seeing this go up year on year forever, but they have seen an uptake in EAP utilization over time as they've been kind of creating this safer workplace. And as they see it as, look, people are feeling a little bit more trustworthy in the organization, in the services we're providing. They're utilizing the EAP program that we have over. And so we're seeing that uptake. So they're seeing that as a positive. As I said, I don't think you'd want to see that continuously going up, but certainly in the first couple of years, building trust, creating that safer working environment takes time, not going to happen overnight, but it's these kind of consistent messages, leaders consistently leading by example and modeling healthy behaviors. That's how you build your culture of trust and your culture of health.
Absolutely. I think when it comes into, I suppose, maybe a year in, 2 years in, 5 years in, Brian, how do we kind of demonstrate, I suppose, that a wellbeing program has gone well, has been, I suppose, fit for purpose? Is there anything you've seen that you've seen people can demonstrate ROI in a particularly good way? What should people kind of look at when they're kind of measuring success of a wellbeing program?
So what I always say is, you've given the example, maybe 3 years or 5 years. Well, let's say you're starting out. Look, 1 year from now, 1 year into the future, you're in the room, you're presenting back to your key stakeholders. I imagine a lot of the leadership team will be in there. What will they be expecting to see in your presentation? What metrics are they expecting to see? Is it simply going to be about the bottom line, how much we've invested and how much we think we've saved? Is that the consideration? Is it maybe talent attraction and retention? Is that what we're looking at here? Or is it something else? Maybe is it this, our key stakeholders, our leadership team genuinely care about the health and well-being of our colleagues and they want to see improved health outcomes across the board, you know, anonymized across the board. Is that the consideration? So start there, understand what your key stakeholders are looking to see and work backwards from that and include metrics that are going to give you that kind of data, whether it is around the health outcomes. So you're building up your survey tools, your focus groups to track that data. And so that's how you're going to say whether it's going to be successful or not. So I wouldn't go and tell an organization you need to be tracking X, Y, and Z. It really, again, depends what the leadership team, the stakeholders in that organization, how they would deem a wellbeing program successful.
And it's useful to establish that from the outset, isn't it, Brian, rather than come back a year later and try and figure out, well, what matters to them.
Exactly.
It's so important to understand, speak the language, clearly articulate, present your business case, you know, in non-woolly language. So often the language around this whole area is not concrete. And I'd love to see a bit more clear, concrete, what are we doing in all these key pillar areas, which encompass the whole area of health, from physical to emotional to mental. What are we actually doing? And there's probably more that we should be looking at. that, but it's really clear what are we doing in each section, and what kind of language are we using to communicate that to the senior team and the population as a whole.
Absolutely.
I think, I suppose, while we're on the topic of kind of looking forward, looking ahead, so I suppose it's probably that time of year now where HR teams are kind of fully in flight planning their wellbeing strategies for 2022 and beyond. For yourself, Brian, I know obviously the workplace wellbeing model has probably changed and adapted, especially over COVID. Obviously, as Mary said, they're looking more kind of mental health strategies, those kind of things. Have you seen anything jumping out that people should kind of focus on for 2022 and beyond? Is there any kind of key things that HR teams should be focusing on when they're planning their wellbeing strategies for next year?
Yeah, well, what I would hope to see is, I'm not sure if you're aware of or your listeners are aware of, that the first mental well-being kind of global standard for mental well-being in the workplace was released in June of this year. So ISO 45003. And effectively, that's a how-to guide, how to build a psychosocially healthy and safe work environment. So it's all plotted out there. It's not too taxing. It's done in a typical ISO standard as well, that's easy to follow. So I would hope that more and more organizations just start having conversations around that. So no matter the size of the organization, you can learn something from this. So I would hope we will see organizations do that, start to implement it. If you're going to do the whole thing, it will be, you know, be a decent enough project, but you can take little pieces of it. You can start with the conversations. You can really build on it and make progress on it. So it's the first of its kind. As I said, it's a how-to guide. It's all kind of laid out there. I would love to see more and more organizations and start to implement that. I'm talking about it in my podcast. I'm sure you guys are going to be mentioning it here as well.
Similarly for yourself then, Mary, I suppose, have we seen anything appearing from our clients, from people we're hearing or talking to? Is there any kind of key things that they need help on over the next kind of year or so when they're talking about well-being? Is there any kind of issues that are jumping out from your perspective?
Any discussion around health and well-being at the moment involves COVID, doesn't it? I think we can't step too far away from it. And we're seeing now, as people come back into offices working together, that, you know, there's certain conflicts around vaccinated versus unvaccinated, concerns about, you know, how well an organization has implemented work safely protocols and compliance with health and safety standards within the organization. So I think, you know, there is genuine fear out there. And I think as organizations need to be aware that people are afraid of public transport and the risks it might pose to them, that tensions might rise within the workplace around, you know, how people behave around social distancing, mask wearing, hand sanitizing. There's quite a lot of criticism out there in the general world. You hear it in the media, you hear it in your home, you hear it amongst your friend groups and at work. I think organizations really need to build that into their health and well-being strategies and make sure that people feel safe when they're in the offices or back in the workplace. I don't know if you're seeing that, Brian.
In terms of the kind of the fear that's out there, is it kind of the, yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's such a mix as well. People are just so unsure, aren't they? They're just not sure. It's the uncertainty, I guess. They thought they were going back at a certain date a couple of times, and now that's been pushed back as well. And then, of course, as you mentioned, all the vaccination questions as well. So, but it's interesting. I think people's whole mindset has changed about work now. It used to be work, I think, anyway. It used to be work first, life second, whereas I think it's completely the other way around now. And it's fitting work into your daily life kind of thing seems to be the approach anyway, which I think is a real positive step. So let's see if that continues in 2022.
Yeah, it's a real flip, isn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of how leaders have to manage going forward, you know, even the fact that leadership teams really have to build in now health and wellness as a really important key topic for their organizations. 2 years ago, you just weren't seen in the same way.
Absolutely. All the language is going in the right direction. It's mentioned at almost every, certainly every all hands, the town halls, maybe even in the kind of meetings as well. There might be a mindful moment to kick off the meetings. So it's just, it has changed completely. So it'll be interesting when things do eventually settle down. Really hope that it stays. It isn't just moved aside and it goes back to the fluffy status that is maybe it had 2 years ago.
Absolutely. So I think lots to think about for 2022 and beyond. If that's one positive note we can take from today's discussion, it's that the wellbeing agenda will hopefully be much higher organizational strategies for next year. So fingers crossed, we do see that reflected in the market and a lot of companies taking it really seriously for 2022 and beyond. I think another key takeaway as well from today, Brian, is just, I suppose you spoke early on about the steps in crafting a wellbeing strategy and getting it out there. And I think that's one key thing we can take away from today. It's how do we do that? There's various steps there around getting your leader buy-in, senior management buy-in, having them as ambassadors for your wellbeing strategy. Also mobilizing and encouraging the wider population to get involved, making sure they're in it from the start so they feel part of it and it's fully successful. And having the data to back it up so that you know it will be fit for purpose, or at least you're informed that what you're doing will be fit for purpose based on the data you have. But I think the key thing, as you said, Brian, is that purpose, not just for, I suppose, when we're measuring it, not so we won't just be clear on what we're measuring and was it all about talent retention, was it all about health metrics, those kind of things. But when we know why we're doing it, again, that's something you can communicate out to your staff and really kind of drive it on forward. It's not just for for data analysis and success and measurement and that kind of thing. Having that purpose there is really, really key to a successful program. So thank you again, Mary and Brian, for a very insightful discussion. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. As always, make sure to check the show notes for useful resources related to today's topic. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.